The Healthy Alabama podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a program that enrolls Alabamians in the health insurance marketplace.
Enroll Alabama is a project of AIDS Alabama. For more information, visit the website AIDSAlabama.org. Welcome to another episode of the Healthy Alabama podcast, sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a project of AIDS Alabama. I'm David Person, host and producer. And this podcast is done in partnership with WJOU, Oakwood University Radio, here in Huntsville, Alabama, Praise 90.1 FM. Today, a very serious topic, and a serious topic that will be addressed from a point of view that we don't normally hear, and that is the point of view of the child who grows up in a home where there is domestic violence. My guest is Chantel Varner. She is an advocate for domestic violence survivors. And you do this, Chantel, on behalf of what organization? I don't think we talked about that.
Shani Cares is something that I founded back in 2015, and it is for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. And it's basically just to build awareness and also to provide prevention education for the children of survivors so that they know they don't have to be the statistic. Society says that if you grow up in a home that has domestic violence, that you will also be a victim. And that doesn't have to be your story.
I'm going to actually circle back to what you experienced as a child. But I just want to stay for a minute with what you just said, which is that the statistics indicate that children who grow up in homes where there's domestic violence are disproportionately likely to become domestic violence victims. Does that apply to boys and girls equally?
Yes. For boys, most of the time, they will either be the abuser because they've seen their father or a male figure act out in a way towards their mom. So they will statistically become the aggressor or the abuser. And for most women, they will become the role of the victim because that's what they saw as a child. They think that's what love's supposed to look like.
Okay, so let's circle back around now to your personal story. You grew up in a home where I'm assuming your mother was abused by your father.
That's correct. So I grew up in a Christian home. My parents were married for 16 years prior to divorcing, and at the age of 5 is my earliest memory of what would have been verbal abuse. And the verbal abuse started and then escalated into physical abuse. Initially, it was done in hours where we were, I would have been asleep, or my brother and I would have been asleep late at night, early in the wee hours of the morning. And one night I woke up to use the restroom and I heard my parents arguing, and it went from an argument to seeing him physically assault her. And that was probably at the age of maybe 7. So from that point on, I think that's when my father realized, oh, she's aware that this is happening now. And so it was no longer a secret. So from that point on, he didn't care if I was awake or asleep. It would just happen.
You have presented an interesting dynamic, or introduced an interesting dynamic here. The fact that initially you believe your father was trying to cloak this abuse. Do you have the sense that your mother was also trying to cloak it?
Yes, they didn't want me to be aware of it. And like I said, that I think I saw my first experience of witnessing at 7. My mom was pregnant and had my brother when I was 8 years old. And so I actually witnessed him abuse her pregnant, which was a totally different experience. It's like you're aware that you're not only endangering your wife, but your child is in danger. Just witnessing him knock her down to the floor and then literally drag her down the hallway.
And you said this was when you were 8?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you think that says to us about your father's mentality? Let's start with his, that he was initially trying to hide this violent, horrible, dysfunctional behavior from you, and then later you and your brother. Well, I guess he wasn't at that point. I guess he wasn't trying to hide it by the time your brother had come along.
Right.
Do you think that maybe he was doing that because he felt guilt?
I think he was trying to maintain an image as, you know, the father figure in this role. But most importantly, he was trying to conceal it because he was so active in the church. My dad was the chairman of the deacon board when all of this was going on. So he could not appear to the outside world as this mean, vicious person that would abuse his wife. And again, after I actually witnessed it, I was also able to witness my mom aiding him in concealing this by putting on tons of foundation to cover up scars and bruises on her face and arms. So I was basically learning how to put on a mask.
How to put on a mask, how to keep secrets.
Yes.
Yeah. How to enable dysfunction.
Yes.
Yeah. So your father, you think, was trying to protect his public image.
Correct.
But he was also, I mean, one could argue, I'm going to get in the weeds here maybe a little bit, I don't know, but one could argue that, well, the smartest way to protect your image would be to stop the behavior.
That's true.
But it seems as though he was equally invested in both his public image and his abusive behavior at home.
Right. So one of the root causes, what I have found as an adult in learning more about what was going on during that time, and my dad was unsure of his calling, his walk in ministry. He knew he was supposed to be pastoring, and he was basically running away from that call. And so in order for him to get away, he would start to drink. And he started as a what they call a casual drinker or a social drinker. And that progressed into, because I have problems developing, I'm going to drink to soothe and ease that. And he turned into an alcoholic. And so from him becoming an alcoholic, he would start to gamble when he drank. And then when he would gamble and lose, he would come home upset. My mom would ask about the bill money or the mortgage money. And because he had lost it by gambling, that would start an argument, which led to the abuse.
You discovered all this through conversations with your dad?
Yes.
as a grown person?
Yes. We finally had what I call an adult conversation at 25, because I witnessed him abuse my mom from the age of 7 to 14. When they finally divorced when I was about to turn 15, I really hated him. Like, if he would have died at that time, any time during that period, I would have been okay. Because I had witnessed that for 7 years at this point of just wanting him to leave. Like, if you can't love her in the way that you should as a Christian man, as a husband, as, you know, somebody that should not want their child to ever have to witness living in chaos, then just leave. If you're not happy, whatever the case is, just leave. So when that finally happened, I didn't really talk to my dad at all from 14 to 20. I think I joined the Air Force at 19. So from 14 to 19, I didn't really have a relationship with him. And as I started my healing, my therapy, at 25, we finally had a very tough conversation, and he went into detail of how he was going through, I guess, a midlife crisis, and he just didn't know how to deal with it.
He called
the alcohol, the abuse of alcohol, the gambling and the abuse of your mom a midlife crisis?
He did.
No disrespect to you, but I don't buy that. Yeah. It's not a midlife crisis. It's something far more insidious than that.
It is. It is. But someone that hasn't gone through their own healing process, they can't acknowledge what. I don't even think at that particular time he was able to acknowledge what really happened. He was living in a
state of fantasy. Denial.
Yes, denial. It was as if it didn't even happen, because I was very active in our church as a youth. I did a lot of youth ministry. And so I would oftentimes talk about this, because I have the platform at this point to now address whatever, because they invited me to speak. This is my topic. And if I happen to land on this in the middle of my topic, that's what would happen. And so because I talked about it, it shined a light on it and it made people ask questions. And that had never happened before, because my mom never spoke about it.
Yeah, let's go back to your mom in terms of this whole question of concealment and keeping secrets and so forth. I understand why the abuser is trying to conceal it. Why do you think your mom was complicit in that?
I had a conversation with my mom about this also. The women in her church, the motherboard, the older women, the people that are supposed to mentor and groom you, they basically coached her into how to hide it. They told her, this is, you've apparently upset him in a way. Just try not to upset him going forward. You know, that's when men hit you, that's their way of showing you that they love you. And when she told me this, it brought tears to my eyes, because I'm thinking, the church is supposed to be your safe place, and this is where you are basically coached on how to mask it.
I think it's important for people to kind of get a sense of what time frame we're talking about here, because this is not the 1930s or 40s or 50s. If you don't
I'm
mind,
36 years old.
You're 36 years old. And so if we were to go back to, you know, let's go back 30 years, give or take, is when she was being given this advice.
Correct.
So we're talking about the 1980s.
Right. Late '80s, early 90s. Yes.
In the 1980s and early 90s, your mom was being counseled by the women of the church to believe that she was the problem and that the onus was on her to solve the problem and protect the family even while your dad was beating her.
That's correct. I find it really hard to believe, but then I think about the advice that the people she was talking to, they had been groomed the same way. And because at the time they were actually grooming my dad to be the next pastor of the church, it just did not, they didn't want to taint his image. So investing in her makeup and how to put it on and hide it and just telling her to pray more and try not to upset him was their version of therapy.
I'm not surprised, but I am disturbed, because I've, like many of us, I have seen through the years that churches, and maybe more specifically, I should say, church people are often complicit in hiding dysfunctional behavior, enabling it, and victim blaming.
Yes.
You know? So I'm not surprised, but it's no less disturbing to hear it and to hear this firsthand account. So the public image of the church and the pastor or the future pastor, or who they hoped would be the future pastor. Right. Did he ever become the future pastor?
No.
Or the pastor? No,
no.
He never did? Okay. So, but trying to protect that investment in him was more important to them, I'm going to just say, than your mother's life.
Basically.
Because one of those beatings could have killed her.
Could have, and not only possibly killed her, but put her daughter in a very uncomfortable situation. So one encounter that I woke up and saw that he was beating her. And I knew my mom had, my uncle had purchased a gun for my mom, but she didn't want it in the house. So I remembered that the gun was not in the house because she had children and she didn't want it in the house. But I knew that she did keep a very large pair of shears. They're larger than scissors, but I mean, like, extremely long. And I knew that they were up under her pillow. She slept with those up under her pillow. I remembered that. So this particular night, I went in their bedroom, got the shears. And before I went in to approach my dad, I called the police. Because in my mind, if I have to stab my dad, if I have to potentially harm him, I need them to know that this was to protect my mom. This was, in, you know, not self-defense, but basically to save her life. And so I called the police and let them know that he was abusing my mom and that they needed to hurry to get there just in case I had to intervene. And I hung up and I went in and told my dad, if you hit her again, it'll be the last time you hit anybody else. And just think of the feeling of a child having to tell their own dad that. Not another person's father, but your own.
How old were you?
I was probably 10 at this point, 10 or 11.
And what was your dad's response?
He stopped and he just looked at me, and it was kind of like he came to himself, like reality hit, like she's serious. Because I wasn't speaking in the form of a child, like timid, or I was confident in saying, I'm serious. If this has to end this way tonight, this will be the last time. And so before anything else could happen, the police were actually at the door. So,
and what happened?
He got arrested for domestic violence. My mom had the option to press charges. And they had, at this point, they had been to our home maybe four times prior to this particular incident. So it wasn't uncommon. So at this point, I'm thinking he's going to be in jail maybe 2 days, if that, but she's not going to press charges. So he'll be out and back here. But the stance that I took that night was basically to let him know, even if you come back in 2 days, this is not going to continue to happen on my watch. So as long as I'm here and I'm aware that this is happening, this confrontation, I'm serious. So it continued to happen, but it wasn't when I was there. So it would be when I was spending the night with somebody else or out of town on a youth trip. But it did continue to happen after that, unfortunately.
For another few years, because you said your parents divorced when you were 15?
I was about to turn 15, so I was 14.
14, mm-hmm. So about another three or so years. What do you think your mom's reaction was to you taking that stand, that you were prepared to basically kill your dad or severely injure him to protect her?
She was hurt because I was taking the stance that she couldn't. Like, she desired to say what I said, but did not have the energy or courage to do so. The other part was she wanted her family so bad. She wanted us to have our dad, because when times were good, they were really good. But when they were bad, they were at an extreme low. There was no middle, in my opinion. There was no level ground. And so she was sad that her daughter was in that position of having to say that. But at the same time, I think she felt a sense of relief because it was something she wanted to say.
How did this affect you? How did your life change after that moment? Or did it change after that moment?
It affected me greatly. I'm more inclined to admit that now, as a 36-year-old, because as a 25-year-old, when I finally had that conversation with my dad, I didn't think I was affected at all. But what I now realize is that it shaped my impression of men. I don't give them grace to do anything with me. And tones are a big deal. So if your tone escalates over a certain point, don't look to talk to me anymore, because I just can't. I grew to learn that certain tones meant my dad was about to beat my mom. Like, I grew to learn that a certain tone meant we probably need to leave, because he's about to lose it if we continue to stay here. It affected the relationships that I had. I didn't ever experience any form of physical abuse, but verbal abuse, manipulation, those were the common factors of everybody that I dated from the age of 18 up until about 26. They all had that common thread of manipulation.
And you think that's because you were drawn to that type of person because of who your father was?
I think so. I didn't realize that I don't know if I was seeking or necessarily attracting that trait or that characteristic, because everybody that I dated after we had that conversation displayed the great parts of my dad, because he's not a horrible guy. He just had some, oh gosh, he needs some help. He still needs some help, actually, because he eventually started to tell me about his childhood, and his dad was an abuser. His dad was an alcoholic. So it's kind of generational. And I even spoke to him about, you know, you can be the difference maker. That was one of the decisions that I made as a 5-year-old when I told my mom, hey, you don't have to let dad talk to you like that. We can use all of my birthday money and move to Disney World as a 5-year-old.
You know, that's very cute. But it does speak to a sadness, though, that even at that age, you were aware of the pain your mom was in.
Yes.
And you were aware, even though you weren't aware at that point in time of the physical abuse, you were aware of emotional abuse and what it was doing to your mom.
Yeah, I learned to put on the cape, too. So that's something that I'm learning to take off.
What does that mean? The cape. Put on the cape.
Putting on the cape means coming to the rescue. So I'm so resolution driven. If anybody brings me anything that looks like a problem, or I'm always that person that wants to help and come to the rescue, save the day. Don't bring me a problem unless you want an answer, because I'm going to find one. And so at the age, like I said, that was my resolution for my mom at 5 years old. And I've always felt like I was her therapist. Like, I basically helped her stay sane through that situation. Because she went through bits of depression when they finally divorced. And so I was her unofficial therapist from 5 until about 16.
Your area of emphasis in your advocacy is the children who grow up in these households, like you and your brother did. Mm-hmm. How was your brother affected?
He's been affected in a variety of ways. He doesn't know how to communicate. That's one of the areas that he's currently working on, is learning how to communicate effectively, because when you grow up in a household where you have almost a dictator mentality of someone just yelling and projecting, you don't know how to have a real conversation, how to resolve an issue without going to the level of 10. So just knowing what real love looks like, experiencing that. We didn't grow up in a household where we saw that. So we're just trying to figure that out.
Even with all of the obvious growth and development you've done, and by the way, let me stop for a minute. You're an extremely accomplished person. You said, you know, you went into the Air Force, and you were in the Air Force for how many years?
Almost 14 years.
Okay, so you had a successful military career.
Yes.
And then from that, you began working for a defense contractor.
Correct.
And from what you've told me off air, you've done very well in that arena as well.
Yes.
So you're a very accomplished person professionally. What about educationally? Did you go to college and get an education?
I did. I started my degree with the Community College of the Air Force with their logistics program. I have not been able to complete that yet because life happened.
Yeah, but it hasn't stopped you from being successful professionally. So you're an accomplished professional person. You've served our country honorably for 14 years in the Air Force. But from what I'm hearing you say today, you still feel like in this area of your life, personal relationships, specifically relationships with men, you're still working things out because of what you experienced as a child.
That is accurate. Yes. It's a process, and I'm trying not to apply the things that I witnessed to my current situation, because oftentimes I find myself looking for the red flag. Because I'm thinking, at some point, my mom had to have seen the red flag and just overlooked it. Because I even had this conversation with her a couple of weeks ago. Did he show signs? Like, what did you like about him, you know? And she said that oftentimes his conversations would be sometimes aggressive or harsh. And so I was thinking, yeah, that was a red flag, like, to me. So that's one of those things where I go into a relationship trying to sift that out and eliminate quickly.
We're almost out of time. I just want to run through some things. I hate to say quickly because this is such an important topic. And in all my years of interviewing people, I've interviewed hundreds, if not thousands of people about a wide range of topics. And this topic a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever gotten this kind of insight from this perspective.
Right.
So I really appreciate your candor and I appreciate what your organization is doing.
Thank you.
Let's run through a few things quickly. So what are you doing for yourself now to try to continue the journey of healing?
Currently in therapy, which is very helpful. I'm trying to basically get to my level of wholeness and not take on my mom's experience and try to view relationships not through what I saw, but what the potential of what could be that's out there for me, because I don't have to relive my mom's experience.
And what advice do you offer to the child, the teenager, who is growing up with this burden that you grew up with?
My advice would be to find your safe place, what makes you happy, and focus on that thing. Because oftentimes you're looking for a way to escape that situation. And some people that I've experienced, they took a unhealthy approach of escaping, anorexia, cutting themselves, dangerous ways out for them to escape. My escape was reading. If I get a book, it's my staycation. It's my getaway when I can't get away.
What do you say to the child or teenager who wants to do what you did, which was to basically go to your dad with a weapon and say, if you don't stop, I'm going to use this on you and it's going to be what it's going to be?
I would say to that person, make sure that they try to call and find someone that can help them in the middle of that situation. I'm just thankful that I was able to call the police before I decided to make an act, because I could have easily just took that action instead of calling the police. But I'm
so you don't recommend that a child do?
No, I don't recommend that they do that at all. That was very extreme.
But understandable.
But understandable.
I mean, I think very understandable. Not advisable, mm-hmm. not wise, very dangerous
even. Very dangerous.
Because depending, your dad could have had a different reaction and turned his wrath on you.
Right.
And then who knows how that would have gone.
Correct.
So very dangerous. But again, I think indisputably, undeniably understandable.
Yes.
And the child is not to be blamed. And I think that's one thing I'd like to say.
Mm-hmm.
Children in that situation are not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they shouldn't take on the feeling or the belief that somehow what's going on in the household is their fault.
that's about 80% of the conversations that I have with the kids that are experiencing this currently, that are actively living in a home of dysfunction and abuse. And so when I get the call that, hey, can you talk to them? They're going through this experience. That's about 50% of our start time. This is not your fault.
Does your dad know that you talk about your family story? Does your mom know?
He does. I actually called him when I got the vision for Shani Cares and how I wanted to help, because before I made the announcement publicly, I wanted to make sure he was going to be okay. Not necessarily that I needed his approval, but I wanted him to know, because he is actively in ministry. He did accept his calling. He's a totally different person now. So I wanted to make sure he knew I wasn't speaking out to bash him or to make him feel bad about his past, but it's really just speaking my reality of what I experienced as a child, and that this indeed did happen. So it's not any exaggeration of a story.
Yeah, it's your story as much as it is his or your mom's. Yeah. So your dad doesn't live in the same city you do.
He doesn't.
Okay. And your mom doesn't either?
She doesn't
okay.
either.
All right. So you operate here in Alabama.
Correct.
In North Alabama. And give me the name of the organization again. Shani Cares. Shani is your nickname?
Yes, it is.
So Shani Cares.
Correct.
You've been doing Shani Cares for how long?
Since October 2015.
Okay.
I started with the Air Force has a NOVA program, which is the National Organization for Victim Advocacy. And within the military, there became a trend of abuse for sexual assault cases and domestic violence, and that higher ups were like, we have to find a solution to this problem. So they actually recruited me to be a part of the program. And that's how I started that journey back in 2013. I got NOVA certified and went through all of the trainings to become a victim advocate and crisis counselor.
All right. Chantel Varner, the founder of Shani Cares, and she advocates for children and teens who are growing up in homes where there's domestic violence. She herself grew up in a home with domestic violence. If people want to know more about your organization, how can they reach you?
They can reach me on Facebook and Instagram under Chantel Varner. I'm currently developing my website for Shani Cares so I can get that off the ground. My government job has kept me really busy, so I haven't been able to do the things that I need to do with that completely, but it is on the rise. So just reach out to Chantel Varner at Instagram and Facebook.
And Chantel is spelled?
Shantel, last name V like Victor, Arner.
Chantel Varner, Shani Cares, domestic violence advocate. Thank you very much for joining us on the Healthy Alabama Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, powerful story. Powerful story. Thank you for your service to our nation as well.
So my pleasure.
The Healthy Alabama Podcast is sponsored by Enroll Alabama, a project of AIDS Alabama on the front lines of trying to stop the spread of that horrible disease. And it's produced in partnership with WJOU, Oakwood University Radio, 90.1 FM in Huntsville, Alabama. I'm David Person, host and producer. Our theme music is produced by DJ Bailey, my man. All right, until next time, be healthy.